The next Clipper race starts on the 1st of September 2019 from St Catherine's Dock in London. There will be 11 teams with over 700 participants covering 40,000 nautical miles. For further information, visit www.cliparoundtheworld.com.
The Clipper Round the World Yacht Race is described as one of the biggest challenges of the natural world and poses an endurance test beyond belief. I'm Leslie, and today I'm talking to Jane Williams about her incredible journey around the world on board one of the yachts. The very first Clipper race left Plymouth on Saturday the 10th of October 1996, and Jane was lucky enough to be on board one of the 8 60-foot yachts. Jane, what inspired you to sail around the world?
Well, I grew up sailing. I think I probably was sailing before I was walking, definitely before I was riding a bicycle. And I read all the tales, Claire Francis's voyage, Naomi James's voyage, Tracy Edwards's voyages, and I thought, what a fabulous thing to do.
How were you selected to join the crew? Talk me through the process, please.
Well, we were the very first race, so really it was a stab in the dark from Robin Knox Johnson. He wanted to create a race that suited everybody, not just the professionals who went on board the BT challenges or the old Whitbread races. So there was a form, pages and pages of an application form to fill out. After that, I was invited for an interview in Leicestershire with Robin himself. And then we were invited for a selection weekend, which took place in the winter. And we actually used Tracy Edwards's boat Maiden because the Clipper boats weren't finished by that stage. And we were sailing around the Solent. One of our tests we had to do was we had to climb the mast of Maiden. And it's quite high. So having been selected for that, I was then given a place on the race, and you had to then complete 3 training, 2 weekends and a week down on our boats in Plymouth before the actual crews were allocated to each boat.
So how many crew members were there on each boat, and did each person have a specific role? If so, what was yours?
Okay, well, the plan was to have 14 crew members and a professional helm. So the helm, generally, in our race, they were all ex-Royal Navy or Merchant Navy. And there should have been 14 crew members on each boat, the plan being that 7 of the crew were going the whole way around the world and the rest were doing a leg of the boat of the race. We were only, I think, full crewed 1 or 2 legs, and we were down to 11 on a couple of legs, which was quite tight for bodies. Roles on board. I was a watch leader, so that meant when the skipper was asleep, I was essentially in charge. I was setting the course, and I had my team, and you know, I had to give them their roles. I was also the victualler, and that's the person responsible for doing the shopping every time we got into port. So food, as you can imagine, was very, very important. Because some days were very long. So finding food that everybody liked, that we could keep fresh or sufficient tinned food that was nice, was important. And I was also the sailmaker. So I was, before the race started, I was sent on a 2-day sailmaking course. And sitting in a sail loft is very, very different than sitting on the floor of a yacht bouncing around in the storm trying to hold on to a sewing machine, a handheld sewing machine, and mend metres and metres of sailcloth.
I can imagine. So what were living conditions like on the yacht?
If I say basic, you'll get a general idea. We had a small navigation station where all the radio and everything was. The skipper had their own cabin, obviously. We had a galley area which had seating for about 4 people, I suppose. And then you went through into the main sleeping accommodation. We did actually have a bunk each, but quite often you'd get back from your watch on deck to find that your bed was full of wet sails, because all the sails lived on the floor, so you were clambering over sails to get anywhere. We did have a toilet and we did have a shower. Not that we were allowed to shower very often.
Right, okay. How was the race organised?
Well, this was the first race. So we went round the world in a westerly direction, basically taking in very nice places along the way. There were six legs to the race, so that enabled crew members to depart and leave. And because we were the first race, they didn't really know how long it would take a 60-foot boat to get from A to B. So the dates were quite generous for the time on land, so that we could absolutely guarantee the changeover dates. So as a legger, you generally had one ocean crossing and one small hop. But obviously, as a round-the-worlder, you went all the way round.
So what was your route in 1996? Which cities did you visit?
Okay, well, we left Plymouth, which is Robin's hometown, and we left in a howling gale, as you do. Fortunately for me, Norwich had just beaten Ipswich the night before, so the three East Anglian crew members had all enjoyed a night in the pub watching the football, and we took with us the 3-1 victory. So, yeah, we left in a howling gale, and it was windy. It was about force 9 gale by the time we got down to the Bay of Biscay, which is notorious for its gales anyway. And our first stop off was in Madeira, which was perfect, really, because we'd only been at sea for less than a week, but it was a good shakedown and everybody got sorted. And then the real life started, because we then went straight across the Atlantic to Fort Lauderdale. Arrived in Fort Lauderdale, moored up against multi-million pound yachts, which was just fabulous to see. And then we went from Fort Lauderdale to Panama, through the Panama Canal, which was fascinating. Wow. The lock system was just unbelievable. But unfortunately, they would only let us through at night, so we didn't get the best view, but it's very busy, as you can imagine, during the daytime. From Panama, we went to the Galapagos Islands, which was a highlight for everybody. But some boats arrived quicker than others, and the Galapagos are very, very fussy about tourism, and you only get a 72-hour stamp on your visa. And it would have meant that the first boats would actually have had to have left by the time the last boats arrived. And as it was Christmas, I think one of the skippers negotiated with the customs authorities in a few bottles of whiskey, and we were all allowed to stay for Christmas, which was very special. So from Galapagos, we then hopped across to Hawaii, where they loved us, absolutely loved us. One of the rituals was that the winning boat was allowed to arrange the celebration party. And as guests of Hawaii Yacht Club, they said, we'll put the party on for you. What food would you like? And the winning crew decided that they would like beer-battered fish and chips. The Americans had never heard of that, but it's still on their menu to this day. It proved so popular. So the third leg, and coming up to the halfway point, we went from Hawaii to Yokohama in Japan, which was when we hit winter. It was cold. And from Yokohama, where we had sat on shore on heated toilet seats, the first time I'd ever been introduced to a heated toilet seat, we went to Hong Kong. And we arrived in Hong Kong in about April, just before the British handed it over to China. So that was quite something. And that was our halfway point. So we said goodbye to the people on board who'd been with us basically for 5 months. And then they were replaced by two other people who were doing half the way round. So the second half, we went from Hong Kong to Singapore. We were due to leave Singapore and it was an absolute flat calm. There was no wind forecast for days. And the area around Singapore is quite rife with sea pirates. So, unfortunately, we all had to motor together until we were far enough away from Singapore and the pirate area. but we had all used all our fuel. And although we didn't use our fuel in the race, obviously, we had to have it as a safety net. So we had to do an emergency stop into Indonesia, which, if you know anything about sailing, when you arrive in a foreign country, you always fly the national flag as a courtesy. And of course, nobody had the Indonesian national flag on board, but one of the boats had a red spinnaker. So they were passing out squares of red spinnaker cloth so we could all make an Indonesian flag, which fortunately is very easy and is just red and white squares. So from Indonesia, where we had bought new fuel, we restarted our race with the volcano Krakatoa as our start line. And then we went to the Seychelles and on to Durban, which again was fabulous. While we were in Durban, the British Lions were there, so we were bumping into Martin Johnson and people in the streets. They're quite tall people. so leg five took us from Durban to Cape Town, where we were moored in front of Table Mountain, and then on to Salvador in Brazil. And then our final leg home took us from Salvador to the Azores and then back to Plymouth.
Oh, wow. It sounds incredible.
It was.
So is the same route followed every race?
No, the race takes place every 2 years, which was always the plan. But as the race has evolved, sponsors have come on board. And the race after us was sponsored by cities around the world. So that seems to be the pattern now. And so they take in those cities.
Okay, okay. And for you, what were the highlights of your voyage?
The sailing was fabulous, but the wildlife that we encountered, you watch David Attenborough, but it's not a patch. Waking up to see whales and dolphins swimming around the boat, and the bird life, blue-footed boobies really do exist.
Right, and were there any low points?
Saying goodbye to crew members was sometimes hard because obviously you lived in very close confines and you grew close as a group. But the hardest leg for me was when we hit Japan because we suddenly were in winter. Having been in summer for the remaining route, it was, cold.
Does the Clipper race still take place? And if so, how does it differ from when you sailed round the world?
The Clipper race is bigger and better now. Our boats went round the world three times, so they lasted 6 years, and they're all still sailing. They're chartered a lot for events and races. But they bought a new fleet of boats, 78-foot boats, so they're bigger, they have more crew. And that's, as I said before, the route has changed phenomenally. And I mean, I think they now do the Southern Ocean, which was a regret that we didn't do the Southern Ocean.
And finally, Jane, would you undertake such a challenge again?
I, at a drop of a hat, if I wasn't quite so old. Saying that age shouldn't be a barrier, because I remember training on Maiden and climbing up the mast with a 68-year-old at the time. And I know he was only doing one leg, but he absolutely loved it. So there are things that I would do at a drop of a hat, but I have to say it's lovely in the morning to open your wardrobe and think, ah, I've got a choice of clothes, not just the two T-shirts I'm allowed to take with me.
Thank you for your time today, Jane. It's been absolutely fascinating talking to you.
My pleasure.
The Clipper Around the World was the brainchild of Sir Robin Knock-Johnson. In 1969, he became the first person to sail single-handed, non-stop, around the globe. The race was conceived in 1995 when Sir Robin wanted to make sailing around the world accessible to everyone, whether they were an experienced sailor or a complete novice.